You're listening to The Point. Pamela Hall was 60 when her husband of 36 years died of pancreatic cancer. The thought of forging a life without her husband was painful. Taking those first steps felt alien, but they ultimately set her on a course for a new and fulfilling life. Pamela Hall's book about her experience is Say Yes, Flying Solo After 60, and she joins us on the phone from her home in New York. Good morning, Pamela.
Good morning, Mindy. Hi. Glad to be with you.
Yeah, your husband, Paul, died shortly after 9/11, and suddenly your world came apart. You write, "Once I had dwelt in the goodness of our worldly realm, but no more. Gone. Paul, memory, us, faith, as if that grip had been a total fantasy." I think anyone who's lost a loved one can relate to that feeling. In your grief, you turned to writing. Talk about that, what writing did for you.
Well, I didn't turn to writing right away. Actually, he died a month before 9/11, so those two things came together a little bit. I didn't think of writing till about 2 years after he died. I had an unusual opportunity. Two things happened together. I had an unusual opportunity to live in Florence, Italy, for 2 months by myself. He had been a solo obstetrician. We had traveled very, very little. That happened, and I wanted to write. You know, I thought of writing a book about him for a different reason, bringing different parts of him together. And my friends would say to me, very sophisticated friends who had traveled, who are accomplished people, how can you go alone to Italy? You don't know a word of English, of Italian. You don't know anybody. How can you even think of writing something? You're approaching 60, and these were accomplished people. And I thought, why are they afraid to pick up things? Why are, though they've done things that I hadn't done, does my life seem to expand into trying new things in the midst of my grief? Mm. And they who are, these were married folks doing very well and drawing down in mm-hmm. a way. Yeah. And I started to ask people about that. People had wish lists, all kinds of wish lists. And I thought, we can be more of what we want, not just wish it.
Yeah.
What is stopping here? Yeah. And so I thought, I've got to write about it.
So what was your first thought then when you heard this invitation, when you got this invitation to live abroad in Italy for 2 months? What was your initial reaction?
Well, my initial reaction was, how could I live in Florence where it's so beautiful and so amazing and everything you see and look at is going to be priceless and precious when he's not seeing it with you? That mm-hmm. was the first thing. Not a fear, but not the fear of going alone, but the fact of not sharing it with him and almost not being entitled to see it unless he does it too. Mm-hmm. That was the initial thing. The second thing, I thought, well, oh, my God, how am I going to do this? And I thought, well, I'm living in Westchester, New York. I'm still miserable. I may as well be miserable there. I was always interested in art and architecture. That was my thing and my major. And I was a career interior designer and painter. And I thought, I'm just going to do it. What's the worst that can happen?
I'll come home.
I mean, I'll just get on the American Airlines and I'm home again. People think these things are so big. Mm. And they are, if you think of them, if your imagination runs riot. But all you have to do is pack a suitcase, book a plane, and you're somewhere.
Yeah. So once you got to Italy, did you question your choice to come or you had that
Never.
Initial guilt? So you didn't look back.
I did. How can you look back right. in Florence?
I haven't been to Florence, but I can imagine.
Or anywhere. Yeah, yeah. It's one of the great places in the world, and what happens is you step off the plane. Actually, everything is strange. They're Italian. The women are gorgeous. You're wearing your Easy Spirit sandals, and the women are wearing spike heels, and everybody is happy and comfortable, yeah. and they know how to get around, and there you are. And I thought, okay, now just keep it simple. You have an address. Go to your place and just get there.
So, life, yeah.
When you think of the practice, get in the cab. He speaks English. Get to your place, unpack, and then breathe, go out, and Yes, but you don't have to do anything. Nothing's expected of you. Just go out into the street and take a look.
Yeah. The trip to Italy was an opportunity, obviously, for you to get outside your comfort zone. So how did your time in Italy change your perspective on your life and your future?
Well, it was absolutely amazing, because once I did that, I had the thought, Pamela, you haven't been many places in this world. You've studied them. You know them all intimately. Why, you know, it didn't cost you. I had free mileage from accumulated purchases on my American, you know, my cards. And I thought, it's at the cost of a modest rental for a month or two, why don't I do it next year?
Mm-hmm.
You could do it again. And the next year I did Rome. The next year I did London. The next year, I said, as long as you can afford it, and it took very little money, and as long as your health holds out, and I did Paris, and then the next year, I made another catastrophic change. I moved from the suburbs into Manhattan, didn't go to Europe, but it was a very small, you know, it seemed so easy after that. That's how it changed. Everything seemed easy. Or doable, and it didn't have to be big. I said to my friends who said, oh, Rome, my God. I said, well, you could go to the next town. You've always wanted to go, you know, do this or that. You've always wanted to. People said, I've always wanted to be a painter like you. I said, well, take a class in painting. What is the big deal?
Mm-hmm.
I've always wanted to do this. I've always wanted to do that. It doesn't have to be that big. It's just that Florence set me on a travel thing.
Yeah.
But it could be very small things in your own living room.
Did you ever not recognize yourself? And if so, was that uncomfortable, or was it more of a feeling of liberation?
I was very lucky. I had a wonderful marriage with a man who let me do anything I wanted. You know, I mean, he didn't have parameters. You have to make dinner. You have to do this. If I wanted to go back to school, if I wanted to take this job or that, we had two children. He never set really any restraints on me. And I realize only now I did have one advantage. He never did anything practical in the house. He didn't pay the bills. He didn't hire the plumbers. And I realized later or buy any furniture. And I didn't care about buying a car. And I realized later that kind of was good training.
Mm-hmm.
It, you know, at the time it was just doing wifely things. But these things anybody can acquire little things with starting in small ways. If you want to, if you want to do something different, if you do have a wish list, don't just sit with it. Everybody comes from a different place. Everybody comes from different skills. Other people have amazing skills that I never have had. You know, like these well-traveled friends, they knew how to climb the, you know, the Alps and to rent a boat in Turkey. I had never done that. And they didn't realize that could translate into other things, even though the idea of going alone to one of those places seemed frightening to them.
While you were traveling, did you meet others who were having or had similar experiences of change?
Not particularly. I mean, I mainly met local people, you know, Italians who were sitting in the piazzas. I would start up with those who spoke English. Mm-hmm. And some did, some didn't. There were American tourists who I would occasionally. People were divorced. I would meet somebody who was divorced and trying to do something else, came with a girlfriend or this kind of thing.
Mm-hmm.
When you travel alone and you talk to people, it's nice to be able to start up, because otherwise you are more alone. And people had all kinds of life experiences.
Yeah.
Europeans who were moving from England to Germany and were by way of Italy, and they were nervous about doing that. The people with all kinds of experiences with change didn't have to be a loss of somebody.
Right. You write about encounters with men, some asking you out on dates, some flirting with you. What was that experience like after 36 years of being happily married to the same person?
Well, it was a lot of fun, because the first couple started with like 30-year-old guys. So I knew that this was just their way of saying hello to you. It didn't necessarily mean anything, but that's just how they related. you know, and with simple people, with a guy who sold me the flowers every other day or something like that. So what happened was, I, you know, it's so sunny, it's so lovely that I just got into it, and we would just share fun comments. What it did was, and then I'd walk away, but what it did was embolden you. It gives you confidence. It makes you feel pretty and attractive, even though you know it's absolutely ridiculous. Mm. So it did that. And then if it was the flower guy or the guy who sold oranges on the corner, I would see them every day. And all of a sudden, it became a relationship. How are you? And how's mm-hmm. this? And how, you know, little things yeah. become how, the next thing.
How did your family and friends respond to the changes that were happening in your life? You know, at first they were like, what are you doing? But did they later say, well, you know, good for you?
They did, absolutely. And they were admiring. And this is why I wrote the book, because they said, they started on, every comment was, I wish I could do that. How do you do that? How did this happen? Oh, but you could do this and I can't do that. All of these things. And so I said, wait a minute. There's no reason why this is for me and not for you. Mm-hmm. And for example, I had a friend who had a purple dress. She could never find a purple necklace to go with that dress. I said to her, look, why don't you take an adult education class in your little town and make your own purple necklace? I said, you may end up making 5 of them. From there, you might sell them at a little shop. I mean, take a little step that you don't have to say, I just can't find the purple necklace and give up. Take the next step. How do I make it happen so I have that?
Yeah. You're sort of answering my last question for you, which is you say that stepping outside of your comfort zone was a choice. So what would you say to someone who might consider doing something beyond his or her comfort zone? Why take the challenge?
Because you never know what you could be, and you never know what lies on there. Taking a challenge is a ripple in life. You take one little tiny challenge, and suddenly you open up. When I decided to become a writer, suddenly what opened up was a whole world of literary people. I left the doctors behind. I left the designers behind for a change, and I suddenly met all kinds of new people. I mean, it's a ripple. You throw the stone in the water, and suddenly it just goes on, and you don't know. Who wants to get to the end of your life and say, I should have. Mm-hmm. What if? And what's the risk? The risk is not such a big deal. How do you step over that threshold, though, of going from wanting to affecting what you want?
Pamela Hull's book about her experience is titled Say Yes, Flying Solo After 60. We'll have a link with more information about Pamela and her books at capeandislands.org. Pamela Hull, thanks so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you, Mindy. They can get it on Amazon. Anybody can. And it's for all ages. It's not just for anybody who wants to expand their life.
Right.
Thank you very much, Mindy.
I'm Mindy Todd. Thanks for listening.
The Point is produced by Amy Vince. The executive producer is Mindy Todd. Production assistance from Jenny Junker and Dan Tridle. Theme music by Benjamin Verdery and William Coulter.